Welcome to the Political Review. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I am your host, and thank you for your incredible patience. We apologize for the technical difficulties, but here we go. We have with us today the former Minister of State for Economic Affairs, the Honorable J. Quasi Thompson. He was also the Deputy Speaker of the House, if I recall correctly, and he serves presently as the Member of Parliament for East Grand Bahama. Mr. Quasi Thompson, welcome to the Political Review. I think this is the first time we've had you on the show.
I believe so. Good afternoon, Mr. Parker. Good afternoon, Bahamas. It is a pleasure to join you all the way from Freeport, Grand Bahama. But it is good to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very kindly. So I along with the rest of the daily press, the politically curious, and those who are civic-minded, will no doubt have listened to the Prime Minister's budget presentation on Wednesday of this past week. And before I ask you any questions, I just have a couple of observations that I'd like to make. Firstly, the term pork barrel politics comes right to mind when listening to the Prime Minister's budget presentation. There were a lot of, and I believe Leader of the Opposition, Michael Pintard, would have used the term candies.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And so there were a lot of quote-unquote candies in this budget. But one of the things that I noticed was that the majority of the, let's use that term, candies, were for the civil service.
Yes.
And the civil servants, that's about 21, 22,000 people, which is about a fifth, maybe, of the working population in the country. And so I find it odd that the government would choose to give civil servants a whole kit full of candies while not addressing, in my view, significantly the private sector employment or employees. It just seems that if they wanted to be as generous as they are seeming to or wanting to seem, they would have spread the love a little more evenly than that. Secondly, there was no talk of breadbasket reform. I mean, absolutely none. Forget talking about the VAT on the breadbasket items. I recall that there had been a vigorous debate under the leadership of Dr. Duane Sands, when he served as the Minister for Health. There had been a vigorous debate about the need to alter the breadbasket, which contains so many things in it that are less than healthy. And I recall the Progressive Liberal Party, when in opposition, had much to say during that debate. And in this, their first fully PLP budget of this five-year administration, they had absolutely nothing to say about breadbasket reform. The next thing I noticed, the Prime Minister did not use the words young Bahamians or young people a single time in his three-hour presentation. This budget does not appear to have a single thing to benefit young people. Now, I haven't gone through all 300 to 400 pages of the budget in detail yet, but I would have thought that in presenting the document, the Prime Minister would make sure to hit all the highlights. And if he did, in fact, hit all the highlights, that means that there's nothing in there for young people. And finally, before I bring in Mr. Thompson for our conversation, I thought the presentation was interesting in some respects. There was some skewing of facts, which I think is expected in political discourse. But on at least one, in at least one instance, the prime minister told an outright lie in the House of Assembly. And I want to be careful. That's why I'm not asking Kwesi Thompson about this. And I'm not talking, this is nothing to do with Guardian Talk Radio. This is me, K. Quincy Parker, saying directly and Philip Grave Davis lied in the House of Assembly. And the lie that he told was his assertion that his administration had launched the Small Business Development Center. That's a flat out lie. There's no other way to say that. If he wanted to claim some ownership of the SBDC idea, he could have said it another way. What he could have said was that under the Christie administration, prior to the Minnis administration, under the chop of Michael Halkidis as the Minister of State for Economic Development, the Progressive Liberal Party launched something called the Small and Medium Enterprise Development Agency, but the fact is that agency failed for any number of reasons. And the Small Business Development Center, as it is currently successfully operating after 5 years of proper management and successful operation, having distributed more than $70 million and assisted more than or about 2,000 Bahamian people, regardless of political affiliation, was launched on September 18th, 2018, under the Free National Movement. It is, in my view, perhaps one of the three most important accomplishments of the Minnis administration, even if the Minnis administration doesn't see it that way themselves. That's what I think. And I thought it was phenomenal that the prime minister would get up in the House of Assembly and claim credit for something that was not his, and that nobody stood up and said, you're telling a lie. So I'm doing it now. PM, you told a lie and you should apologize to the Bahamian people. Now, with that said, there are some other elements in the budget presentation that I thought were worth discussing with the former Minister of State for Economic Affairs. And
Quincy, I wonder though, Quincy, if I could, and apologize for interrupting, but I just wanted to make a very short comment on the last point that you made. And I could not sort of let that go without me commenting on it. I think I was there at the time. In fact, at the time when the Minnis administration was contemplating and preparing to create the Small Business Development Center, a group went to Washington. I was along with that group. And we studied the Small Business Development Center in Washington, and we studied the Small Business Development Center out of University of Texas. We traveled to different aspects of the, met with the university officials, we met with the Chamber of Commerce officials, and understood how the Small Business Development Center worked, understood how it was connected to universities, how it helped small businesses. We heard from other countries, Caribbean countries, that had already started their Small Business Development Center and heard the success stories. And we brought the message back to the Bahamas. And under K. Peter Turngress, who was at that time serving as the Minister of Finance, then formed the Small Business Development Center. And you are correct. It is one of the best accomplishments of the Free National Movement. It has helped thousands of Bahamians. And it came in at just the right time, because it came in right before Dorian. And so it was able to assist those persons who had been damaged by Hurricane Dorian, and then it came in right before COVID. And it played a tremendous role in maintaining a number of, or I would say thousands of businesses to get through COVID. And it administered one of the most important programs, which was the program which assisted businesses in for the Small Business Development Center. And so the Free National Movement had a goal. I believe we achieved the goal in a lot of respects in terms of assisting small businesses. But I do not believe that we have allocated sufficient funds to the Small Business Development Center to continue that vision.
I suppose there is always room for full disclosure. Most people who listen to the show and most people who are familiar with me will know that I worked with the Small Business Development Center at its inception, right?
Yes.
So I can certify everything that you've said. What I can say is the initial bet was $5 million. Yes. And then upon proof of concept, that was moved to $25 million. $5 million a year instead of $1 $5 million bet. And even that was insufficient to the demand for the services that exists. The way the SBDC revolutionized the entry into small business and the ability to become sustainable and the ability to expand and pivot is revolutionary. And yes. The idea that I can understand why a political administration would want to claim ownership. I really can. But the only noise the Progressive Liberal Party made about the SBDC was accusing it of funding FNMs, which was absolutely extolable. Forgive me, sorry, Quincy, we'll get to this.
Go ahead.
that was horseshit of the highest order. That was absolute nonsense.
I could remember fighting with Davinia, and saying to Davinia that, look, we need you to assist this person. We would like you to help this person. And she flat out said, look, we don't answer to politicians. There is a board that she is answerable to, and she will help those across the board, and that there was no political influence that I am aware was allowed during that time. All and sundry were helped by the Small Business Development Center. But Quincy, you know, and I wanted to get to this, but since we're talking about it, I invite people to take a look at this budget and to look at. And I'll give people the page number for them to look at so that they don't think I'm pulling numbers out of the air. To look at page 208 of the budget. And that is the Ministry of Finance's allocation for the small and medium-sized business support. And you will see a couple of things in this page. You will see that $42 million or $43 million, basically $43 million, was spent. And this isn't allocations or estimates. This is what actual money spent. $42 million was spent in the fiscal period of 2020 to 2021. That was the full period between 2020 and 2021. And if we look at the next column along the line, which is July 2021 to March 2022, which 3 months of that was the Free National Movement, and the rest was the Progressive Liberal Party, there's a stark difference. While we spent $43 million, their spend is under $5 million. The next line also is very telling. They've allocated $25 million, or the previous year, an allocation was $25 million. But they have reduced that allocation to $8 million. So the question, there is a lot of questions that the government has to answer when it comes to this allocation. Now, if their issue is, well, we move the money someplace else, or there's a difference in terms of, but we like to know, because if you allocated last year $25 million, you're only allocating $8 million this go around. And we know that we've spent, when our full term, we spent $43 million. And in your term, you spent less than $5 million. So there's a lot to answer in terms of the priorities for small business development. And even that $49 million was not enough. We still need more additional funding for small business development and for small business sustainability.
Yeah, the budget as presented seems to miss on a number of very critical. Another one that I really want to talk to you about is NIB. Yes. As a reporter, I wrote story after story after story about these actuarial reviews that show that without drastic immediate change, the National Insurance Fund will be depleted by now, it's 2028, I believe it is, which is just around the corner, practically speaking.
Yes.
And as I recall, the last thing that the Prime Minister said about it as the Minister of Finance was that he wasn't dealing with that now. Now, the National Insurance Fund is the primary social safety net for Bahamians. It is what we rely on because most of us don't have pensions. And that fund is to be depleted before a decade, every budget should have measures in it to address that problem. How can it be even considered responsible as a government to bring a budget and not address national insurance?
Quincy, let me put it this way. There is a unfortunate theme of this budget. Our present leader, Michael Pintard, put it very well in terms of there are a number of candies in this budget, but eating too many candies will ultimately cause you to have some cavities, and it will ultimately cause you to have a day of reckoning where you now have to deal with the candies that you ate before. But what is happening in this budget is the PLP is still campaigning. And so they are not governing. And to move from a place where a political party continues to campaign and move to a place where they begin to govern and they begin to tackle the big, large challenges and problems that the country faces. And that is a continuation of a theme where the Progressive Liberal Party is continuing to campaign. They are continuing to do things to appease persons, but are not tackling the difficult, hard, decisions that must be made in terms of governing, and national insurance is just one of them. Budgets provide you with an opportunity to lay out your economic plan for the upcoming year. It provides you with an opportunity to show the country what is the direction that you are taking fiscally and what is the direction that you are taking in terms of your economy. How are you going to, what are your priorities in terms of the next fiscal year? The national insurance was hardly mentioned, if at all, during the prime minister's communication. And that is disappointing, because one of the things that we said even before the communication was that we wanted to see the government's plan to tackle national insurance. And you are quite, you're absolutely right. For years, it has been anticipated that the national insurance is going to run out at some point. And a tough decision is going to have to be made to shore up national insurance. Now, one of the challenges that we had during our, because people may ask, well, why didn't you do it? But one of the challenges that we had were, one was called Hurricane Dorian, and the other one was called COVID. And we had to call upon national insurance to actually pay assistance when it came to Hurricane Dorian victims. And we had to call upon national insurance when it came to the unemployment assistance program that, again, had to be put in place, helped thousands of Bahamians. But we had to call upon national insurance to assist when it came to the unemployment benefits. So, unfortunately, because of Dorian and because of COVID, the FNM administration, we had to call upon NIB to work for the people during a crisis period. Well, we are now moving out of a crisis. We are now moving into what the Prime Minister indicated as a full-on recovery. Well, if we are now moving into a full-on recovery, then one of the urgent matters that we should have seen dealt with is how do we tackle NIB? And we have not seen a plan. We have not seen in terms of what is going to happen, what time frame is going to happen. We have not seen what the government's plan or strategy is on how we will rescue. Again, they are campaigning, governing, and they are kicking it down the road. It is a continuous theme, unfortunately.
Mr. Thompson, there's a question for you with regard to, all right, so before I do that, I just want to make sure that folks know it's 1 minute after five. You are listening to The Political Review, and my name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host. Our guest today is the Member of Parliament for East Grand Bahama and the former Minister of State for Economic Affairs, J. Kwesi Thompson. We are discussing the government's budget presentation, which was full of candy. One might if one chooses to wax poetic, one might say it was full of sound and fury, yet signifying nothing. Of course, the civil servants, who are the beneficiaries of much candy, would probably say otherwise. But the rest of the working population, who will have to live with this budget, I believe they will have some in the coming weeks and months. So, Kwesi Thompson, the Prime Minister's budget presentation really didn't focus much on either young people or unemployment, in my view. I know he mentioned that they were going to do us, you know, say some things about unemployment in the proper budget debate. But even so, I found the absence of young people to be noteworthy and a matter of concern. Am I being overly pedantic in your view?
No, I think it is a worthwhile comment to make. and it is, in my view, a worthwhile criticism to make. The leader of opposition, Michael Pintad, our leader, made the very same point that there's no mention of young people, one of the largest bases that we have in the Bahamas. And looking to the future, one would have expected to see how are we going to tackle the largest group of unemployed, which is the unemployed youth. Now, no one has a difficulty in giving teachers and nurses the salary that they are most deserving of and the salary increase that they are most deserving of. But what we also need to see is how are we going to create jobs for those thousands of young people that are going to be coming out of school? How are we going to create those thousands of jobs that are needed for those young people in the Family Islands? How are we going to create those thousands of jobs that we're going to need for those young people? And that requires giving a detailed plan on job creation. One of the things that we put in place during our last budget was we put in place a VAT-free program for the private sector, where the private sector could have kept their VAT in order to use it to hire additional employees, rather than increase the civil service. So this government has decided to spend an additional $56 million to increase the civil service, as opposed to taking some of those funds and making a creative path to create employment in the private sector. And that really is the way that we would recommend the government move, because what you will not do is you won't increase the burden of increasing the already bloated civil service. What you won't do also is add to the pension burden that the government already has, and the insurance burden that the government already has. And you will, if you did it where you created a program that would stimulate private sector employment, that is then more long-term. And so that is the way that we would suggest it goes. And to have a specific program that tackles youth unemployment, youth education, that tackles youth training, youth entrepreneurship. That is the kinds of programs that we expected to see and expected to hear. We may hear that in the upcoming days of the debate, but if it is a priority, one would have expected to hear it in the budget communication. Again, campaigning, overspending, and not governing, not tackling the relevant big ticket items country needs. We need to stop overspending, stop campaigning, and get down to the difficult, challenging business of governing and tackling some of the large, big ticket items that the budget really should be tackling.
And speaking of big ticket items, there's a perennial expectation around budget discussion time that each budget will make some headway in dealing with state-owned enterprises.
Absolutely.
Or even quasi-state-owned enterprises, right? So in this last few years, BPL and water and sewage have been in the news almost religiously. And I would have thought that given its prominence, not just as a state-owned enterprise, but also its prominence in the energy reform discussion and in the cost of living discussion, I would have expected to hear a lot more about Bahamas Power and Light Company Limited. What I heard did not fill me with oodles and oodles of confidence. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it, we missed the mark. Again, failure to deal with the major challenges the country faces. Failure to put us on the right trajectory, which is correcting, which is a huge, huge drain on the public purse. Bahamas here, instead of us tightening our belt, decreasing the allocation for Bahamas here, anticipating making the difficult governing decisions, which the Free National Movement did, it was difficult for us to decide to increase fares and to increase those issues like causing persons to pay for baggages and those sorts of things. It was a difficult decision to make. It's an unpopular decision to make. But it put us, and it started the discussion in putting us on a more fiscally responsible way when it comes to dealing with our state-owned enterprises. We looked at, and this was anticipated, where we had said for water and sewage to begin to look at the pathway on how we make water and sewage more independent. How do we make it financially independent? Where at the very least, what we take in covers our expenses. We don't expect to make a profit on water and sewage, but at the very least, we should be governing it in a way where it pays for what it spends. So we need to look at how do we fix these long-term issues, because and here's how it relates to the ordinary guy on the street. The ordinary guy on the street that needs help with social services, they need help with small business. They need help with accessing other government services and the government to be able to do additional things that make their lives better. Well, if we continue to pour money down the drain when it comes to these state-owned enterprises, then there is less money to do those things that will help the ordinary Bahamian. So we needed to hear from the government in terms of what are their plans when it comes to managing state-owned enterprises. And they said they would do it in their fiscal strategy. Their fiscal strategy that was presented to Parliament in January, it was late, by the way, but it was presented to Parliament in January of this year, just a few months ago. They said in their fiscal strategy, and the fiscal strategy is, again, a plan of action on how you will govern the country for the next year when it comes to fiscal matters. They told the rating agencies, they told the Bahamian public, they told Parliament that the state-owned enterprises would be a top priority for them in this coming year. We heard absolutely nothing in the communication about how you will continue to reform, or how you are going to reform Bahamas Air, how you are going to reform water and sewage. There is some difficult decisions. And again, they have ignored those difficult decisions. They are still campaigning, they are overspending, and they are not dealing in a fiscally responsible way with the big ticket items like the state-owned enterprises.
Is it possible that we are jumping the gun with the criticisms of the budget, given that all we've really heard is the budget presentation? I know you will have gone through the document yourself. And I would like to, before you, because I know you have another event, I wanted to ask if you had any specific issues with the budget that you are in terms of page number, figure, dollar figure, or whatever the case may be?
Sure. I think, well, a couple of things. I mean, well, it's a lot of things, but I'll address a number of these things in my budget communication. But here's one big one. The Fiscal Responsibility Act was put in place by the Free National Movement, a historic piece of legislation and a very important piece of legislation. It finally put in place governing principles for government when it comes to spending and when it comes to our fiscal affairs. It mandated that you had to put in place a fiscal strategy. And that fiscal strategy spoke to what you projected were going to be your revenue and what you projected was going to be your expenses and what you projected was going to be your fiscal deficit. Fiscal strategy in the latest one that was passed by or was tabled by the PLP indicated that this coming, there was going to be a deficit of a little over $300 million. Well, the PLP has bust that wide open. And instead of there being a deficit of 300 or so million, they have now come and said it's going to be over 500 million. And here is the challenge with respect to that. First of all, worst case scenario, it's unlawful because you have changed your fiscal strategy without bringing in the exceptional clauses, which is required by the Fiscal Responsibility Act. We did it twice. We did it when Hurricane Dorian, and we did it when a COVID pandemic came. We came back to Parliament and came back to the people and said, listen, we are not going to be able to abide by our projections in the fiscal strategy because of these issues. Here is our new projections. PLP didn't do that, completely ignored it, and just said that we now have new projections, even though it was their projections that they just gave a few months ago. From January to now, that has caused such a drastic increase in the fiscal deficit. In addition, the issues that, and this was pointed out by Moody's, in terms of the projections that they have for revenue. Moody's was kind in saying it was overly optimistic. Now, I interpret that to me, they can't be real numbers, that there's a problem with those numbers. And here is the just sort of, you know, common sense, everyday thinking is you decrease VAT from 12 to 10. You have a number of other issues going on in terms of your additional spending. So you've not abide by the additional spending. But your revenue has jumped, your projection for revenue has hugely jumped. In fact, you have projected that you're going to make 500 in VAT than you made last year. Now, we know the economy is getting back, but even Moody's is saying, accountants are saying, economic folks are saying, those numbers, where are you getting those numbers from? How are you projecting to get those numbers? So not only have you not abided by the fiscal strategy that you put in place, which is a breach of the law, but you have also overshot the revenue numbers. And now we know you can spend what you say you can spend, but there is no guarantee that you're going to make what you say you can make, which means that 500 deficit is risky because it may balloon into a large deficit. There also was no talk about debt management strategy. Again, they are spending as though we are not in a financial crisis. Could you imagine a almost 50% increase assistance, travel and subsistence? It was 10 million allocated, but they have increased it now to 14 million. So how could you, during a time when we should be tightening our belts, during a time when we should be fiscally responsible, we increased the travel budget and we increased the subsistence budget. Again, it's not justifiable. You also decrease, and I invite people to take a good look at page 44. Let's take a close look at 44, page 44 of the budget. You know, we again talked about increasing social services and so on, but look at the numbers. Social services budget, which was an allocation of $152 million under the line item social assistance benefits and cash, it was $152 million. That's what allocated. What was allocated last year? It has now been reduced to $51 million, $80 million, which when you add the 50 and the 80, because the 80 is social assistance benefits in kind. Now, I'm not sure what that is, but let's give them the benefit of doubt to say that that's going to help go towards social assistance. But even if you add the 50 and the 80, that's still less than what was allocated. So you are still reducing the allocation for social assistance at a time when we need it the most. One other issue that the government again continues to fail on. Yes, we have reduced duty on a number of items, but they have still been stubborn in terms of reducing VAT or taking VAT back off of breadbasket items. It is a very simple way of dealing with and assisting when it comes to inflation. And again, they are campaigning, but they are not making the difficult decisions. They are being fiscally undisciplined and not making the difficult decisions to govern the country. They are dealing with, and when it comes to inflation, what in this budget will help when it comes to the gas prices? What in this budget will assist us with the cost of shipping in items? We didn't see, you know, Prime Minister made a huge deal about how he was able to negotiate a shipping company to reduce the fees. Well, we still haven't seen the details of that. How do we benefit from that if you don't tell us what the difference is, or which shipping company? What are the details of this shipping company that you've been able to negotiate with so that we can benefit from it? Right now, I don't believe anybody's benefiting from it because we don't know the details of it. Another item that, again, the government has been stubborn on and not decided to move on is taxing the millionaire's property, the $2 million, which we put in place where we added it from 10% to 12%. They remove it from 12% and put it back down to 10% for properties above $2 million. Again, it is a very simple way that you could take that additional money and add that on to help when it comes to the additional giving persons incentives or cash back payments when it comes to high gas prices. We are not making the difficult decisions when it comes to governing. One of the huge challenges that we believe this government is going to have is when it comes to them increasing or putting back the business license on commercial banks and on insurance companies. That was taken off and replaced with a fee system that was done to satisfy the European Union and take us off the blacklist. Simple as that. They have now decided that they're going to reverse that position, which unfortunately may put us back in a very risky position where we may be blacklisted or have a threat of blacklisting because of the reversal of that recommendation or that agreement that the Free National Movement government put in place.
Hello. Sorry, Kwesi, your mic is muted all of a sudden.
One of the things that Bahamian businesses are crying out for.
Yeah, we missed. Sorry, your mic got muted at the end of that last sentence.
My apologies. One of the things that we have not seen is how, what is the government's plan to tackle the ease of doing business for Bahamian businesses? We started on a track of tackling the ease of doing business, where it took so long for businesses to be put in place, where you had to go to all of these different locations in order to get all of these different approvals before you could finally get a business license. But we put in place a provisional business license system that allowed you to get a provisional business license in a very short period of time, get up and running while you are doing and while you are going around getting all of those additional approvals. With the improvements when it comes to getting a building permit from the Ministry of Works, because that, again, it was a huge challenge in terms of getting started with your business. So there are some big, hard governing issues that we, again, have not seen. We have not heard anything on the global tax initiative, the global minimum tax initiative. The Prime Minister did not mention that in his budget communication. Again, we've already made the international commitment. What is our plan? Come back to the people and tell the people what is our plan on how we are going to implement this. What is the effects of implementing this? What are the opportunities of implementing this? We need to understand what is happening. Marinas is a huge issue. And it is also a dangerous issue. If you listen to those in that field, where we have now added an additional 12%, additional 10% to the already 4% that was being paid. Yes, we need additional revenue, but we also must make sure that it's not done in a way that is going to shock the tourism sector and that is going to put us at a disadvantage when it comes to other locations that we are competing with. So big ticket items that we must look at in terms of addressing. It is some of the things that was failing in this budget. Some of the things that, again, we didn't hear much about Bahamian entrepreneurs. How are we creating wealth for our Bahamians? We didn't hear much about young people and how we are creating wealth and training. We didn't hear about our digitization transformation program, which was a huge issue for us in ease of doing business, a huge issue in providing services. We didn't hear anything from the government in terms of what is going to happen in our developing when it comes to our digital transformation. And it is one of those sort of pain points for the Bahamian public that if we are able to use technology to serve the Bahamian public better, that is what we should be looking at doing. But unfortunately, we didn't hear enough about it. We didn't hear about tax reform. We didn't hear what is the plan for tax reform. Again, a very big issue that the rating agencies, and this is one of the issues that the rating agencies said, they don't understand how your projections are you are going to make your projections without seeing some tax reform and some tax increase. They don't understand how you're going to make those projections without having those things in place. And so those are the tough questions that this government have to answer. Overall, in terms of a budget, we believe it was lacking. We believe, again, it's more campaigning without tackling the big ticket items that the country requires and that they have a responsibility to tackle.
There's a question I want to ask, because I know you have to take off in the next 2 minutes. The leader of the opposition mentioned in his press conference that there was some concern about this $6 million in legal settlements. Can you speak to that real quick and elaborate what the concern is there?
Well, the concern is we want to know what it is. I think the public would like to know what it is. You know, this government, again, must really stop the hypocrisy, because you have the Prime Minister and other ministers who come out and they talked about this so-called $1 billion in missing funds it turns out that it was not $1 billion in missing funds at all. It turns out that it was a difference of interpretation in terms of what was to be included in the election report and what was not going to be included in the election report. And in terms of an accounting difference. So, and we see the evidence of that when the prime minister said, well, we're going to have to borrow an additional 200 of these unpaid bills. Well, what happened to the 800 million that would make up the 1 billion? If this 1 billion was in fact unpaid invoices that were not disclosed. Again, smoke and mirrors. They again have not disclosed the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts that is required to be disclosed by the Procurement Act. In fact, as far as I recall, a statement was made that we were going to make the changes during the budget period. Then that flew out the window because now they said it's going to be made at some point during this fiscal year, which means it's going to be a continuation of ignoring the law when it comes to the Procurement Act. It's going to be a continuation of not disclosing the legal required contracts that the public is entitled to hear and the public is entitled to know. They have accused the Free National Movement of not coming to the public and not providing the evidence and not providing the evidence of contracts and so on. Well, they unfortunately are doing worse because at that time, the law didn't require it. This time, the law requires it. The Procurement Act requires it, and they are not doing it. So again, it is the very same concern where you now and should disclose what are these legal contracts that must be paid. But again, it goes to a deeper issue with respect to the Procurement Act and the need to abide by the law. See, all of us have, there's only one standard, and all of us are required to meet that one standard. And you cannot accuse one side of not disclosing when you yourself are guilty of even worse when it comes to not disclosing when it comes to the public matter. So that's really where the leader quite rightly was speaking about in terms of non-disclosure, the hypocrisy of this government, unfortunately.
All right. It is 5:31. Mr. Thompson, I know as we agreed, you have a prior arrangement that you have to get to. Good luck to your daughter. And may she break a leg, as they say in the theater.
Well, I hope she don't break a leg. I just want to do well.
Well, I mean, that's theater talk for
you. I know. No, but I enjoyed the conversation. I thank you for the opportunity to just give my thoughts on this budget, which again, as we said, we believe falls short. But we have faith in the Bahamian public. We have faith in the Bahamian people. And we are doing our job as an opposition where those things that we believe are right, we will support. Those things that we do not believe, we will continue to remain and we will continue to support. And I want to publicly commend our leader, Michael Pintard, for his initial response, which we thought hit all the right notes in terms of what the constructive criticism of the budget. We hope that the government will listen. We hope that there is still time for the government to adjust certain things and to what we believe do better. So again, I thank you for the opportunity. It was a very good conversation, and I hope to come back again.
Indeed, we look forward to having you back. So thank you very much. With that, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up our conversation on the Prime Minister's budget presentation. This next week, the budget debate starts, and we want to make sure that you're prepared. So we'll be right back on the Political Review. You're listening to us on Guardian Talk Radio. Thanks, Kwesi.
Looking for another way to save on your grocery bill? Then look no more. Sign up for My Solomon Smart Rewards, the ultimate loyalty program, to start earning smart rewards every time you shop Solomon's, Fresh Market, and Exuma Markets. Sign up is completely free in all participating stores and online at amlfoods.com. Loyalty members earn 1 point for every dollar spent, and points can be earned and redeemed in all participating locations. Don't be left out of the savings. Sign up in Nassau, Grand Bahama, or Exuma today and start earning your smart rewards.
What's going on, Bahamas? It's your boy, Sawyer Boy. COVID is clearly unpredictable. It doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are. Put a beating on me. I had no other option but to go to the hospital. I remember the doctor telling me if I had waited one more day, I wasn't going to come inside here alive. You don't want to be in the same position that I was in. Vaccines may not stop you from getting COVID, but it can stop you from getting COVID the way I had COVID. You don't want that way.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Thank you very much for joining us today at on Guardian Talk Radio. We're listening to the Political Review. My name is K. Quincy Parker. It is my pleasure to be your host today. Before we get back into the show, I would like to send condolences from our family here at Guardian Talk Radio. We pray for peace and comfort in this trying time. And that's it. So back to the show. You can, of course, text us, as usual, at 422-4796. That's 422-4796 for the text line. And for the rest of the show, I'll open the phones as well. You can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Look forward to hearing from you, hearing what you thought about the government's budget presentation, what you thought about our conversation with Kwesi Thompson, and some of the criticisms that have been raised by the official opposition. Look forward to hearing from you on those. And I just wanted to come back to some of the other sort of areas where I expected to hear things from the administration in the budget that I did not hear, or that I didn't hear enough of. Firstly, there was some talk prior to the budget presentation over the last couple of months about a global minimum tax initiative. And this is something that countries around the world are embracing as an opportunity to provide more government revenue. And it's basically an opportunity to implement a minimum corporate tax as a jurisdiction. And this is something that Mr. Davis had talked about, but it was not in evidence at all in the budget presentation, progress being made on that issue. In fact, the Prime Minister said very carefully that they were not going to introduce new taxes, but they introduced a couple of new fees, which of course we all interpret as, you know, new taxes anyway, whether they call them taxes or not. And so there's a question about whether or not that's just, you know, linguistic gymnastics, a tax by any other name, so to speak. We have some text messages here that I'd like to read. This one says, these guys will not deliver for the Paul, what? For the poor. Oh, I think the thing that's supposed to mean for the poor. They say they would bring in deliverance, but they would not take the V80 or the, that should be VAT, off the medicine. Having read this again. Let me read that again to make sure that the text's point is made. These guys will not deliver for the poor. They say that they were bringing deliverance, but they would not take the VAT off the medicine and breadbasket items for the people. This next one says, Prime Minister Davis and his merry men are so wrong. Every time the poor man say take the VAT off the medicine and the breadbasket items, they say that's the opposition talking. Very good point. Very good point, Texter. They do have a tendency to blame any criticism on political opposition, which is not entirely true. I want to really, before I get back to some of the other points I wanted to make, I want to underline something Kwesi Thompson mentioned with regard to the small business provisions in this new budget. The former administration, the F&M administration, spent almost $50 million on the Small Business Development Center. In addition to lying and saying that his administration launched the SBDC, Mr. Davis has allocated less than $10 million to the Small Business Development Center. Now, there are a couple of different ways to look at that. And so I think we probably ought to reserve judgment until we hear the context that that number should be placed in. But it juxtaposed against what was spent in the last term, it does seem like a drastic cut. But to be fair, in the first budget in which the SBDC existed in 2018, the allocation was only $5 million. So technically, it might be that the Davis administration is pumping up the budget, but it doesn't look so at this point. And so we need to be very careful as we are listening to find out what exactly is happening with the Small Business Development Center. And that is something that I will be paying close attention to because it's obviously very close to my heart. Some of the questions that some of my colleagues who've been paying attention and sort of, you know, sharing questions is, you know, one of the questions is whether or not the increase in spending in social services is enough to deal with the enormity of the situation facing the Bahamas. I'll leave that to you to make a judgment on it. Also, and this one that was also mentioned by the official opposition, there was no talk about the government's plan to reform the pension scheme. So that's going to be something to pay attention to. For all of the candies that the civil service got in to continue to use Michael Pintard's term, for all the candies that they got, new employees will be paying for a contributory pension scheme was not answered, but it must be. It's something that we must be paying attention to. And given that there is some challenges in terms of revenue and also priorities, the question about pension reform and the government's pension scheme is something that the 20,000 plus people in the public service will be paying very special attention to. And it's interesting that I want to say we have to be careful. Let me rephrase. I'm going to rephrase what I was going to say. We have to be careful not to be carried away by sleight of hand and distracted by goodies when we are weighing what is important in terms of what the government is doing. It's one thing to get a couple of dollars now. Everyone who should get their increment, you know, God bless them. But at the end of your work life, if you've put in your however many years and you are counting on the government's pension scheme to keep you at a certain standard of living, you ought to be paying a lot more attention to what happens with the pension scheme than you do the increments that mean you may have a couple of dollars now. And I think that we have a tendency as a society to get carried away with what we can get now. And our politicians have a tendency, because they come from among us, to focus on what they can give us now versus ensuring that at the end of our work life, we will be taken care of. And proof of that is that the ninth actuarial review released in 2009 or 10 talked about the fact that NIB would be empty in 2035, I think it was, without an increase in the contribution rate or without substantial reform. Then the next actuarial review brought that date closer. And then the most recent actuarial review says 2028, before the end of this decade, the fund would be empty without substantial reform. And yet, rather than reform NIB and deal with how the tens of thousands of Bahamians who are counting on NIB to keep a standard of living once they retire will live, the governments continue to focus on how they can quickly put money in your pocket. You know, a couple of hundred dollars here, a couple of hundred dollars there. But at the end of the day, they're not checking for what happens when you retire. And that's a problem. That's a major, major problem. This budget was a perfect opportunity for the Davis administration to begin serious work on reforming the National Insurance Board and protecting the National Insurance Fund. We'll have to see as the debate develops what progress they'll make. On the question of state-owned enterprises, the Minnis administration had a brilliant opportunity to fix BPL's financial woes by facilitating the rate reduction bond. And they did not get it done. They failed miserably to assist BPL in getting the rate reduction bond completed. As a result, they left office with BPL still in a state of financial despair. Despite all of the good work that happened over the last 5 years at BPL, and don't kid yourself, amazing things happened. Station A at the Clifton Pier Power Station was an intrinsic part of ending perennial load shedding, which you as a citizen will have to accept. Your political affiliation aside, summer load shedding after 2019, there was none. Other changes included the fact that, and the numbers demonstrate, 80% fewer that did exist, that did happen, were of a shorter duration. So fewer outages of a shorter duration. And that was provable by data and numbers that you can go and look up yourself. Nobody has to tell you that. And you don't have to take anybody's word for that. You can look it up and see the numbers right there in black and white, plain as day. Imagine if the Minnis administration had taken the opportunity to get the rate reduction bond done. Now, we come to a place where there's a new government. They scrapped the old board, fired the old CEO, they put in their new board and a new guy to talk. And what's gonna happen? All the progress that BPL has made over the last 5 years is probably gonna come to a screeching halt while this new administration looks around to try and find a way to stamp whatever change is gonna be made as something that they did. Because no matter what we say about government being continuous, every administration wants to be the one to say they fixed this, they fixed that, they fixed the next. The fact is, under the Minnis administration, BPL made positive strides. Now that the Davis administration is in, the best possible thing you can do is to continue that forward momentum. But how much money do you all want to bet we're going to wear of stop, review, and cancel before any positive progress is made at BPL, purely for politics? I hope I'm wrong. This texter says, yeah, I hear you, texter. There's a difference between load shedding and power outages, and that's one of the things that BPL was working hard to try and help people understand. You will have power outages. No power company in the world doesn't have outages. But load shedding is a result of a shortage of available generation, and that is no longer the case. BPL has sufficient generation now. So the outages that are happening now are not because there's not enough generation, but for other reasons. And that's their water to carry. I can't carry that water for them. I don't work there anymore. But I think that this opportunity, in this budget, they could have pursued the rate reduction bond, especially since those words, rate reduction bond, made their debut vis-a-vis our power utility in the mouth of one Philip Brave Davis when he was Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Works in the Christie administration. He was the one who came up with the rate reduction bond mechanism in the first place. And so it was fascinating to see that he didn't support it as in the opposition, even though it was his idea. And now it will be interesting to see whether or not he moves ahead with the rate reduction bond, which was, as I say, his own idea. This is important stuff. You as a citizen have an entire, how does one say? You have an entire budget that is being presented to you by the government. And the government's idea is over the next 12 months, this is how they're going to spend your money. These are the outcomes that they intend to achieve. Government in the sunshine and transparency and accountability suggests that you pay attention so that you can keep them accountable. And I hope that today's conversation will have inspired you to do your job as a citizen. And as I say, pay attention to the budget communication and the budget debate, because they're spending your money. And you, as a citizen, are going to have to live with whatever choices they make going forward. Thank you for joining us live today on Guardian Talk Radio here at the Political Review. We apologize again for the technical difficulties at the top of the show. And thank you for your patience and for sticking with us. And we'll see you next week, where no doubt we'll have a more in-depth conversation about specific elements of the budget debate, which we expect to be an exciting and important time in national development. All right, that's going to do it for us here today. Wally, thank you for your good work as usual, and may God bless you all. See you next week. That's it for me. I'm out. Take care. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.